talents. I'm so glad to be part of this. Talents from all across Iran and many parts of the world competed in the festival, so winners should be proud of themselves.
Held in Iran's city of Rafsanjan, the two-day event brought together participants from 14 countries, including Iran, Afghanistan, Kyrgyzstan, Nigeria, and Turkey, to flaunt their knack for stage performance.
The scale of this contest is global. Many of us participants did not have any idea we could be stand-up comedians or show hosts. But when we got on stage here, we ourselves discovered our own talents.
I really love that, seeing that all people around the world are coming here and presenting themselves. It's a very great feeling. Of course, they will be progressed and they will develop yourself when they will get the result.
The jury is comprised of top Iranian actors, TV presenters, and voice artists. They say the competition has been tough, and those who stood out are real stage stars.
We tried our best to pick talents who really acted like professionals on stage. Not only should they care about the standards and principles of a stage performance, but they must innovate, improvise, and stand out.
This festival acted like a university for stage talents. It taught a lot of lessons about the stage to participants, especially for those who failed to win the contest.
Organizers say this contest is not just about scouting for stage talents. They say the event helps shine a spotlight on talents and lead them to their community.
The fifth Stage Stars Festival is aimed at bringing stage talents to light. Many of the participants already have a few years of experience, so this stage is not supposed to discover them, but to springboard them to a higher level in their careers.
All of the contestants, even those who come from foreign countries, must perform in Persian. However, organizers plan to include other languages in the upcoming editions of the festival.
To those who won the golden mic here, this is a dream come true. But they say, aside from the prize, Stage Stars has marked a milestone in their pursuit of success, since they have now come under the spotlight. Yusuf Jalali from the city of Rafsanjan.
A big sit-in was held inside the Red Cross office in the blockaded Gaza Strip on Monday in solidarity with Palestinian prisoners on hunger strike. On Sunday, scores of Palestinian prisoners started a mass hunger strike to support two of their fellow prisoners who have been on hunger strike for several months to protest their administrative detention. Around 500 Palestinian prisoners are being held without charge or trial under the so-called administrative detention, while their incarceration periods can be renewed indefinitely. Some prisoners have been held in administrative detention for more than 10 years. Their only recourse to draw attention to their plight has been hunger strikes. Among them, Khalil Awaude has been refusing food since March, and Raed Rayan has adopted the same passive resistance approach since April.
Yesterday, dozens of Palestinian detainees from different factions entered an open-ended hunger strike in solidarity with two Palestinian detainees who are going on their long hunger strike protesting the administrative detention, Khalil Awaude and Raed Rayan.
Currently, some 5,000 Palestinian prisoners are held in 24 Israeli prisons and detention centers. Families of Palestinian prisoners have slammed the silence of the international community over the plight of their loved ones.
I want to talk about the silence of the international community and the United Nations. I sent many letters about my son's case to all of them to intervene with the Israeli government to talk with them about my son's case, but unfortunately no response from all of them.
Prisoners' advocacy groups also condemned Israel's treatment of the Palestinian prisoners, who are subjected to inhumane and degrading conditions, including solitary confinement and bans on family visits.
Palestinian detainees nowadays are subjected to inhumane practices by Israeli prison services. Therefore, we are here today to convey a message to the international community, especially to the ICRC, to put pressure on the Israeli government to stop such policies and to end the Palestinian suffering, Palestinian detainees' suffering.
Many here believe that the support Israel enjoys from some countries like the United States gives it the green light to act in contradiction with international law regarding the treatment of prisoners.
Statistics show that the Israeli regime has arrested around 1 million Palestinians since 1967, including women and minors. Among them, some 50,000 administrative detainees. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Algerian Foreign Minister Ramtane Al-Amamra has met Syrian President Bashar al-Assad in Damascus and handed him a letter from Algerian President on bilateral relations and preparations made for the upcoming Arab League summit in Algeria. Assad said the Arab League is the mirror that reflects Arabs' status quo, asserting what matters to Syria is the content and result of joint Arab action rather than the form. Amamra said Syria is a basic element on the Arab arena and that the Arab world needs Syria, not vice versa. He stressed that Algeria will remain standing beside and coordinating with Syria regarding Arab and international developments during its presidency of the Arab League summit. The top Algerian official also held a separate meeting with his Syrian counterpart. The two sides agreed to boost economic cooperation and establish a joint higher committee for this purpose. However, the main topic was how to bridge gaps in the relations between Syria and some Arab countries, as Algeria is exerting efforts to bring back Syria to the Arab League.
If you ask Arabs, does Syria have a legitimate seat in the Arab League, the answer would be yes. Is Syria's absence from the Arab League in the benefit of any side? The answer is no. Syria's absence harms joint Arab action. Are there means to solve this situation? This is the core of my consultations with Arab brothers. We are optimistic.
Muqdad asserted that the issue is beyond just attending or not attending the Arab League summit.
We coordinate with Algeria and some Arab countries, regardless of Syria's membership in the Arab League. What is important now is to coordinate policies and come out with conclusions that serve Arab goals. Syria supports all measures that renew Arab stances, solidarity, and an Arab understanding of importance of joint coordination between all of us to face mutual challenges.
Algeria is one of the few Arab countries that remained supportive to Syria during its crisis, as it condemned terror and rejected economic sanctions on Syria.
This is the first official visit of an Algerian foreign minister to Syria in years. It comes as Algeria strives to unite Arab states and enhance Arab-Arab relations ahead of hosting the upcoming Arab League summit in November. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Thank you. supplication on Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord and Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. Oh, the most merciful.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
While the world continues to condemn Russia's special military operation against Ukraine, Russia provides its reasons for continuing that operation. In the latest, Russia has said that it had hit a Ukrainian warship and a weapons store in Odessa with its high-precision missiles. Two attacks have taken place in Odessa by Russia. In this edition of the Spotlight, we will look at the developments coming out of this conflict, which consists of continuing energy shortages for EU countries, and whether the U.S. provocative moves can prove to be one too many for Russia to counter-react with what the former Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev once said, the U.S. may receive a Judgment Day response. Our guests for this edition of the Spotlight are Ray McGovern joins us. He's a former CIA analyst who joins us from Raleigh, North Carolina. Also joining us is Jeff Brown, radio host and journalist who joins us from Normandy. Welcome to you both.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Let me first start with you, Ray McGovern, if I may. We're looking first at this incident that has happened twice in the port city of Odessa, where you have Russian, after signing that grain deal for wheat, et cetera, to target it. But it has said that the missiles did not hit the port's grain storage in the first incident and did not cause significant damage, and the other two actually have targeted what Russia has said is an area that held some U.S. weapons. Russia has its reasons. How do you see this strike by Russia, of which it's being blamed for now by the entire world practically?
Well, it's very hard to know. Russia does have its reasons. The question is whether those were ammo dumps and supplies and so forth. And we will not know that because we have no journalists worth the name in that part of Ukraine. There's a backstory to this grain deal, and that is that even though Russia has been blamed for preventing the export of grain, it was the mines that Ukraine laid in the access to Odessa that really made it impossible for the grain ships to be insured on the one hand, and then to go get the grain and bring it out. That has been resolved now. There's a channel that has been cleared of mines. The Russian foreign minister worked this out with the UN Secretary General 2 weeks ago, okay? Why doesn't the UN Secretary General acknowledge that? Well, We all know why. So the deal is good, but it could have been done weeks ago if there was an agreement by the Ukrainians to clear the mines that they had laid in the approaches to Odessa.
Okay, let's take a look at the military aspect of this war, Jeff Brown, if we may, in terms of how things stand when you compare the Russian army versus the Ukrainian army, based on just the latest, just a few aspects of the numbers, the Russian military, 771,000 active military personnel versus Ukraine's roughly 200,000. These are rough numbers. Russia's total tanks, 20,000. A little bit more than that, 20,050 versus 2,045 for the Ukrainian side. This is skewed heavily in favor of Russia to the point where it's kind of hard to really imagine Ukraine catching up when you have these kinds of numbers in favor of Russia. What kind of strategy could there then be in the Ukrainian officials' minds to continue this war?
The president of Russia, Vladimir Putin, recently said in a groundbreaking speech, and I wish we could talk about it, but we don't. This is not the time to do it. But he said that that NATO wants to defeat Russia, and he said, "Okay, go ahead and try. We haven't even really started." So all of this propaganda from the West about the Russians, they can't move and they can't advance and they, et cetera. They are using a little finger's worth of their military might. The U.S. and NATO thought that Russia was going to run out of high-precision missiles in 2 weeks. The Russians learned in World War II that you never run out of ammunition, and they never did, and they're not going to run out of ammunition now. This is not about Ukraine. This is about the West trying to save Western imperialism, global capitalism. This is way, way beyond Ukraine now. And it's pretty clear to me that Russia, they're taking their sweet time. The West thought that it was going to deplete Russian resources. Russia is basically toying with the West like a cat and a mouse, and they are the Russians are now depleting Western resources. And Shoigu, the Minister of Defense, was just in Donbass last week,
and said, time to move further west and beyond Donbass to get Ukrainians away from the Donbass so that their missiles can quit slaughtering innocent victims. Russia has already won, NATO has already lost, and Russia is going to bleed NATO dry until it has no more ammunition left.
Okay, well, that puts another aspect to this, Ray McGovern, if you agree, because I was going to ask you about the fact that, what kind of goals would Russia have? They set out wanting that eastern part, but as our guests there indicated, their aspirations are not beyond that. But he put a twist in there, if I may call it that, that it wants to deplete the West, in particular the U.S., and then in turn, by default almost, EU countries' resources. Is that what Russia now intends to do, or maybe it has had that plan way before?
Well, there are three very important things that happened this past week, and I want to name them before we run out of time. One was the Iranian statement that they fully support Russia and its aims in Ukraine. Two was the Chinese foreign ministry statement saying the same thing. Real big events. The third one plays into what's going on in the ground. Now, on the same day, oddly enough, Foreign Secretary Sergei Lavrov from Russia said, we're going to expand our aims. We said we'd settle for Donetsk and Lugansk. No. We've got Zaporozhye. We've got other places farther to the west. And we're going to move ahead. And the reason we're going to move ahead and change our original designs or aims is because of the presence of HIMARS. Now, he singled out this rocket system by mentioning HIMARS. Now, here's the crux here. What's HIMARS? Well, that's a rocket system that has a range of about 50 miles. That's dangerous. Now, why did he mention that? Because the U.S. is giving HIMARS to the Ukrainians, and at the same time, on the same day, the Defense Secretary of the United States said, and I quote, "When I heard the news that Russia was expanding its aims in Ukraine, I thought, well, I'll bet the Ukrainian leadership is really happy about how effective our HIMARS are and that they know how to use them." Now, nobody has put two and two together. In other words,
you can do it HIMARS,
Lavrov was saying, is occasioning an expansion of Russian aims, and the Defense Secretary of the United States doesn't seem to realize the implications of this. He's more engaged in a rhetorical system as how good the Ukrainian leadership might feel. My friends who know a lot about military affairs say that HIMARS is no magic bullet. It's not going to change much, and it will encourage the Russians to go farther than I believe they intended to.
Well, yeah, HIMARS, I'm glad you explained that, Ray McGovern. Another thing that it does have, from what we understand here, is that it is, I think each has six GPS radars. It's very precision-guided in that respect. So Russia, in part, did have a reaction in terms of what you mentioned about Lavrov. Now, one of the things that maybe, Jeff Brown, maybe points to the fact that the U.S. and NATO together want this war to continue is perhaps the piece of news that came out, this was at this point a couple weeks old, how British forces have begun training Ukrainian soldiers to the tune of 10,000 of them in order to make sure that they will get the special military training, which obviously involves using the equipment that they have no idea how to use. Do you think, and that's going to take time, I'm guessing, when you train that many, is that one of the reasons perhaps why the U.S. and NATO member countries want this war to continue at this point, to give them a chance of trying to defeat Russia?
You're asking me?
Yes. Jeff Brown, go ahead.
Well, NATO must be absolutely delusional to to think that they're going to win this war. And it's, they think they're buying time. I think it's the Russians that are buying time, and they can train 100,000 people in London, and it's not going to change the outcome of what's going to happen in Ukraine. The Russians have applied a tiny percentage of their capability. They could bomb the Ministry of Defense and the nerve center of the Ukrainian army in Kiev with their precision missiles and hurt almost no one. They haven't even begun to really stretch things out here. And with Shoigu, and as Ray mentioned, Lavrov, you know, talking about moving further west. I mean, between all of us, I think in 5 years, Russia's going to have elite tank divisions on the borders with Romania, Hungary, Slovakia, and Poland. They're going to end up with the entire Ukrainian landmass, because the West is simply not going to stop trying to destroy Russia, failing the entire way. And the only way to stop it is to get to the EU border. And I think that's what will happen in the next 5 years. I think it's just a matter, it's just an eventuality, because the West will not stop.
Well, Ray McGovern, let me see what you think about what the former Medvedev has said in terms of the possibility of Crimea being attacked with these HIMARS weapons, because that's one of the things that was mentioned by Zelensky, of which he said that will ignite Judgment Day response. Judgment Day will come very fast and hard. It will be very difficult to hide. Can you please tell us what he means by Judgment Day?
Well, Medvedev has been the bad cop over the last several months. In other words, he's been given the task to issue pointed warnings. Now, as I mentioned, the HIMARS, for example, have a range of 50 miles. Now, you put them somewhere near Crimea, and they can do a lot of damage. They can't reach that bridge just yet unless they, well, no, I don't think they can have the range for that. But there are other rocket systems that the U.S. could provide. I'm not looking at a horizon of 5 years. I can't think in those terms. I'm thinking of a horizon of several months, and the key juncture is the U.S. midterm elections. By November, when the elections take place, the West is going to be losing profoundly. And there will be great pressure on Biden and his military to do something even worse than HIMARS. And that concerns me greatly, because if they escalate all the way to more advanced systems, which can go 200 miles, then Russia itself and that bridge that connects Russia with Crimea are in jeopardy. So this escalation, which I believe really started just this week on the 20th, when Lavrov said we're going farther, and the defense secretary of the United States said, well, you know, well, see, the Ukrainians will be very happy to hear that, because our weapons are working, and that's why they're going farther. Well, doesn't he? How is he advising the American president? Is he telling Mr. Biden, hey, we got to be prepared for some really bad results here? When they go farther west, they're going to take Odessa. They may go as far as Moldova. And, you know, this is a real problem. It's not a rhetorical exercise. Does he tell Biden that? I'm not sure he has the brains to do that. He's no smarter than Blinken, the Secretary of State. And that's an invidious comparison.
Well, you have other statements made. For example, Jeff Brown, this question for you, where Zelensky has promised Ukraine will not give up as the Russian invasion at this point is entering the 6 months. On the same day, which is today, you had the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine say, Washington will support Kiev for as long as it takes. So we're trying to figure out a timeline. Ray McGovern says a couple of months. I think you made a reference, Jeff Brown, to years. Do you really think it will take years?
Well, I said 5 years that the map will be changed in 5 years. and Ukraine will be reintegrated into the Russian Federation, into the motherland where Ukraine was for centuries. And in fact, Russian Orthodox Christianity began in Crimea. So there's a lot of history with Russia there. I just don't see any other choice for Russia than to just keep pushing. I mean, they could do what the United States does, and flatten everybody and kill hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people, like they did in Iraq and Libya and what they're doing in Syria, et cetera. But they're trying to save civilian lives. They're trying to save civilian infrastructure. And since the Ukrainian Nazis put all of their personnel and equipment in churches and hospitals and apartment blocks and other sensitive sites, it really frustrates the Russians. They could roll to Lviv in a month or two if they wanted to wage war like the United States typically does, which is no regard for civilian life and no regard for for infrastructure. So I think Russia is thinking in years. I think they know they are going to deplete NATO's weaponry. There's even Raytheon and the other manufacturers are saying it's going to take them 3, 4, 5 years to replace what's already been sent to Ukraine. How are they going to get all that back? And as far as Zelensky is concerned, he and his mafia crony that manipulates him like a puppet, they're making billions off of this thing. They are making billions, raking money off of all of these arms and stuff coming into the country. So he loves what's going on, because he's becoming even a bigger billionaire than he already is, and his mafia boss who works with him. So that's my assessment. I really hope Russia does roll all the way to the border of Poland, and because that's what it's going to take to bring Western Empire to its knees.
Mm-hmm. Ray McGovern, you have something to say, it seems like. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd just like to comment on that and to warn that there could be what Sergei Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, warned just this week, a false flag, an unanticipated event, the kind of thing that changed things dramatically. I have in mind Zaporozhye, where there are many nuclear structures there. The Ukrainian Nazis are crazy. It is not beyond their capability or their intention, in my view, to strike one of those nuclear sites, to blame it on the Russians, and everything changes, because now the Russians have attacked the nuclear facilities in Ukraine, and there are many of them. So I just warn that things could change rapidly, and Lavrov himself is warning in a very pointed way about these staged, he calls them, staged events to prevent the inexorable advance of the Russian army.
So what kind of response will we get, supposedly, if what you're speculating happens?
Well, that's just it. I have no confidence that Biden is up to responding to this. As a matter of fact, Lavrov himself has said in a recent interview, Biden is not in charge. Who's doing this are the top of the State Department and one or two people in the White House. They have ample proof of that, because Biden has gone back on some of his promises, almost certainly due to pressure from the military-industrial complex, as well as State Department and one or two in the White House. So they have no confidence in Biden, neither do I. And this raises a really explosive situation if a unplanned or a false flag attack happens, and as I say, it doesn't have to be a nuclear thing. It could be all kinds of other things like chemical attacks, such as the ones that were staged in Syria.
Indeed. Well, there was another explosion that it kind of has been swept under the rug, but it is pretty noteworthy, and that is the treason that was noted inside the Ukrainian government, where President Volodymyr Zelensky dismissed the security chief and also the prosecutor general, and he said that there are roughly around 650 cases involving officials that are suspected of treason, aiding Russia. Now, how big a deal is that, Jeff Brown?
You know, Zelensky, it's a sad commentary that this Nazi sympathizer is the most powerful leader in the Western world right now. It's tragic. And who knows? You know, there's so much corruption. There is so much money, you know, money laundering going on in Ukraine. Ukraine is the biggest washing machine for the West for money laundering. It could be he just needs to, you know, get some guys out who are not, you know, cooperating with him and putting in some of his cronies. I have no idea. And it's also, you know, optics to look good, like he's trying to save Ukraine. So I really can't say, and who knows. And whether they even left or not, it may have just been a psychological operation that he asked these guys to leave.
Let me cut you and give Ray McGovern a chance, and you could respond. And with that, that'll be the last question. Ray McGovern, go ahead.
I could easily catch this in terms of a staged event. Now, what happened was real. Okay, Lavrov himself, in his major statement this week, talked about Zelensky or whoever comes in to replace him, okay? Gratuitous remark. There's going to be someone coming in to replace him. And you know, the Russians are afraid of being blamed for that. They've avoided that so far. And Zelensky, please remember, is not his own man. He's pulled by strings in Washington and in Brussels, and also by the Azov people, the Nazis, against whom he has to be very, very afraid, because he's vulnerable from both sides, the right and the left.
Thank you. We're going to end it there. Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst. Jeff Brown, thank you so much, radio host and journalist. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Tapway and the team, it's goodbye until next time.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to another episode of our weekly series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. As you know, last week we took up explanation of Surah Hadid,
which is number 57 in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran, and mentions the heavy metallic element called hadith or iron as being sent down by God to endow the earth itself with mighty force and provide humanity with the many benefits of its structural strength, as well as all the great tests of faith that arise from this. The surah presents several divine attributes, then proceeds with the grandeur of the Noble Quran, the state of the believers and hypocrites on the day of resurrection, accounts of the past nations and spending in the way of Allah for establishment of social justice. It criticizes the monasticism and social seclusion, and mentions the response received from the public by the previous prophets. We continue from where we left you last week, and here are ayahs 10 and 11.
وَمَا لَكُمْ أَلَّا تُنْفِقُوا فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ وَلِلَّهِ مِيرَاثُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ لَا يَسْتَوِي مِنْكُمْ مَنْ أَنْفَقَ مِنْ قَبْلِ الْفَتْحِ وَقَاتَلْ أولئك أعظم درجة من الذين أنفقوا من بعد وقاتلوا وكلا وعد الله الحسنى والله بما تعملون خبير من ذا الذي يقرض الله قرضا حسنا فيضاعفه له وله أجر كريم.
Why should you not spend in the way of Allah, while to Allah belongs the heritage of the heavens and the earth? Not equal are those of you who spent and fought before the victory of Muslims in Mecca. They are greater in rank than those who have spent and fought afterwards. Yet Allah has promised the best reward to each, and Allah is well aware of what you do. Who is it that will lend Allah a good loan, that he may multiply it for him, and that there will be noble reward for him? Recall, last Friday, in our explanation of the previous ayahs of this surah, we said mere expression of faith in God has no value without practical display of what the Prophet has taught, including helping the poor and the needy, in view of the fact that the wordings of the Noble Quran are among the best and everlasting signs in this regard. The ayahs that we recited to you now point to the fact that everything in the heavens and the earth belongs to the Almighty Creator, and out of His infinite mercy, people have been temporarily given worldly properties from which they ought to spend in the way of Allah, to whom is the eventual return of all. The believers are then promised divine rewards, saying that those who had expended in Allah's cause before the peaceful surrender of Mecca and had defended Islam in the battles imposed by the infidel Arabs are not on a par with those who did likewise following the victory of the Muslims. It should be noted that before the victory in Mecca, the Muslims were a poor community, so those who spent in the cause of Allah in such days of distress are superior to those who spent after the removal of poverty when economic prosperity was achieved. It is a historical fact that the wealth of the Prophet's deceased wife, Hazrat Khadija, peace upon her, that was the inheritance of Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace upon her, and her children, was spent to feed not only the displaced Muslim immigrants to Mecca, but also to strengthen the defense of Medina in the face of the constant military attacks of the infidel Arabs of Mecca. As for active fighting in the way of Allah, it was the valor of the Prophet's cousin and son-in-law, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, that won all the battles imposed by the infidel Arabs. Ayah 11 encourages believers to provide interest-free loans to their brethren in faith, calling such goodly actions as loans to Allah, in view of the fact that interest-free loans safeguard people's prestige, removes poverty, increases love and affection, prevents usury, strengthens the economic structure of the society, controls greed and miserliness, guarantees distribution of wealth and growth in the culture of cooperation and collective development. From these ayahs, we learn that number one, charity for good causes brings rewards from Allah and assures the collective development of the society. And number two, interest-free loans promotes the spirit of brotherhood, prevents exploitation, and strengthens the economic structure of the society by removing poverty. Now let us listen to ayahs 12 and 13 of the same surah.
يَوْمَ تَرَى الْمُؤْمِنِينَ وَالْمُؤْمِنَاتِ يَسْعَى نُورُهُمْ بَيْنَ أَيْدِيهِمْ وَبِأَيْمَانِهِمْ بُشْرَاكُمُ الْيَوْمَ جَنَّاتٌ تَجْرِي مِنْ تَحْتِهَا الْأَنْهَارُ خَالِدِينَ فِيهَا ذَلِكَ هُوَ الْفَوْزُ الْعَظِيمُ يوم يقول المنافقون والمنافقات للذين آمنوا انظرونا نقتبس من نوركم قيل ارجعوا وراءكم فالتمسوا نورا قيل ارجعوا وراءكم فالتمسوا نورا فضرب بينهم بسور له باب باطنه فيه الرحمة وظاهره من قبله العذاب.
The day when you will see the faithful men and women with their light moving swiftly before them and on their right, and greeted with the words by the angels, there is good news for you today, with gardens, with streams running in them to remain in them forever. That is the great success. The day the hypocrites, men and women, will say to the faithful, please let up on us, that we may glean something from your light. They will be told, go back and grope for light. Then there will be set up between them a wall with a gate, with mercy on its interior and punishment toward its exterior. These ayahs refer to resurrection and mean to say that on the day of judgment, the light of faith and good deeds, which will be on the right side of all true believers, whether men or women, will guide them to their destination in paradise, where they will be greeted by the angels and ushered into gardens of perpetual bliss, equipped with all sorts of divine bounties.
on the day of resurrection, none shall carry the burden of another, and no person can recommend others except those who are given permission by Almighty Allah to recommend whosoever of the believers they find suitable for receiving mercy and forgiveness from Allah. It means that on that day, the pleas of the hypocrites and disbelievers to the true believers to rescue them will be in vain, because they had died in the state of denial of truth and were immersed in sins. A wall or barrier, that is, the record of deeds, will divide the true believers from the hypocrites and the disbelievers, though communication between them will not be cut off, so that the evildoers must realize that the mercy and grace available to those who do good was within their reach as well. But due to their own rejection of monotheism and the teachings of the Prophet, instead of mercy, now the wrath of Allah envelops them. These ayahs teach us that, number one, men and women are equal in achieving moral and spiritual virtues. Number two, the light of faith will guide the faithful toward paradise on Judgment Day. And number three, those who did not come out of the darkness of ignorance, polytheism, atheism, and hypocrisy will remain in darkness in the hereafter. In conclusion of this week's episode, here are ayahs 14 and 15 of Surah Hadid.
يُنَادُونَهُمْ أَلَمْ نَكُنْ مَعَكُمْ قَالُوا بَلَى وَلَكِنَّكُمْ فَتَنْتُمْ أَنفُسَكُمْ وَتَرَبَّصْتُمْ وَارْتَبْتُمْ وَغَرَّتْكُمُ الْأَمَانِيُّ حَتَّى جَاءَ أَمْرُ اللَّهِ وَغَرَّكُمْ بِاللَّهِ الْغُرُورُ فَالْيَوْمَ لَا يُؤْخَذُ مِنْكُمْ فِدْيَةٌ وَلَا مِنَ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا مأواكم النار هي مولاكم وبئس المصير.
They will call out to them, "Did we not used to be with you?" They will say, "Yes, but you cast yourselves into temptation, and you awaited and were doubtful, and hopes deceived you until the edict of Allah arrived, and the deceiver deceived you concerning Allah. So today, no ransom will be taken from you, nor from the faithless. The fire will be your abode. It is your refuge and an evil destination." These ayahs mean to say that, in response to the pleas of the hypocrites, who would remind the believers of how they had lived with one another during the transient life of the mortal world, they will be told that instead of believing in God and the teachings of the Prophet, you persisted in your disbelief and life of sins, so our paths and destinations are different now. In other words, the hypocrites and the disbelievers ruin their own selves by failing to avail of the proximity with the believers during the earthly life. It also means that if such persons claim their acquaintance as an association with the Prophet, they will be told that since they did not believe him in their hearts, companionship with the Prophet will not save them from the punishment of the eternal fire. In this world, people may overcome their problems and punishment through ransom. But on the Day of Judgment, there is no questions of any ransom or rescue from their evil fate. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, people are rewarded or punished according to their deeds, not acquaintance. Number two, a life of disbelief and sins entails the punishment of hell in the hereafter. And number three, there won't be any ransom or rescue on Judgment Day for the disbelievers and hypocrites.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. We'll be right back.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.